When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I was part of the search and rescue for a while, but that job changed. I became a park ranger and went to the Forest Service for that. Well, one day I was out with my buddy, whom we'll call Jake. He's a fellow ranger, but a newbie. We had been told of some strange activity around this area right before a shift had begun. One of us had asked if they could give us more info on it or anything to go off of. But there really wasn't much to go off of. On our way out of patrol, something happened that still gets me sick thinking about. We were riding along in the truck. 1 minute just talking about stuff when we came up to some footprints near the road. These got our attention, and naturally so. The tracks were humongous, crossing into the woods across where we were driving down this back road. I stopped and got out to see what they were, which, yeah, was a dumb idea if you ask me. Jake stayed in the truck, watching where I went. We couldn't talk because of radio silence and the fact that we had to be quiet, listening for anything unusual at all times. The tracks looked like they belonged to some large animal. They reminded me of those found near coyote skinning sites or something similar. I'm not saying skinwalkers exist, but it just seems strange with all this stuff going on, as well as these prints being so close to the sighting reports we had received earlier that day from dispatch. We made note of them and left them alone, but we followed our usual patrol route, moving further away from the road until we got to an area where some cabins were located. That's when we heard this whooping sound that was echoing off in the trees around us. It sounded like it was coming from all around, not just one direction or area, but omnipresent, everywhere at once. It was coming from the woods and bouncing off of things, making it sound everywhere. We stopped to see what kind of animal can make this type of noise and still have so much echoing going on at the same time. I looked over at Jake, who had his rifle promptly aimed in every direction, looking for whatever could make that noise. He was obviously spooked by this thing we knew wasn't normal. I looked back just in time to see red eyes glowing at me from roughly about 100 feet away through the trees. I could tell it was looking directly at us, and it made me freak out even more than before. The creature then dropped down on all fours and began moving towards us fast, like nothing you would ever want to go up against in real life or death. I knew that thing wasn't any kind of animal either. It didn't move right, for one thing, and its red eyes were glowing like some sort of monster out of a movie. It seemed like it was attached to some sort of demonic monster, as we could see its shape start to form as it came out of the trees. Jake looked over after seeing the eyes too and let off a shot, hitting it in the shoulder. It was kind of hard to tell in the dark, but it looked like it might have gone down or, if anything, disappeared into the woods without making another sound. It vanished like it was never there. I told Jake to get ready for this thing to come back as it screamed at us and let out this hellish howl coming from the same kind of creature. What were we dealing with? We tried to search for it afterward, looking for any blood trails or tracks, along with anything else we could find to explain this thing. But we came up empty-handed. No matter how long we stayed out there searching, that's when we finally got the word out to get out there and get back to the station as quick as possible. Something was going on this patch that could not be explained to anyone. We never talked about this again or brought it up, but I know Jake still gets a little freaked out even now, thinking back to it even after all this time has passed. Not counting those things he saw before getting me involved in any of this. I didn't believe him at first, but I knew what he saw wasn't normal, especially after hearing that awful noise coming from nowhere like an animal that nobody would want to run into. It could have been anything as far as we knew, but I knew it wasn't good. This thing was going to come after us, knowing whatever was out there probably knows I work here now, and it makes me nervous, wondering what will come next. I know that this thing isn't going to attack this place, since every time it showed up, we were always armed and prepared. But maybe we'll make the mistake of going out there unarmed one day, being vulnerable and caught by this thing. This is one of those experiences that I have that I've never really pre-told to anybody. It sounds like something out of a grade B horror movie, but it happens 68 years old retired Navy Commander David Fravor is now involved in civilian life. Having worked for decades as an aviator with the United States Navy, and then later as a pilot for the U.S. and Reserves, you may remember David Fravor as the guy who had led top-secret investigations of reports of unidentified flying objects. He has also achieved some notoriety back in December of 2017. He had spoken about his experience investigating a UFO while piloting an F-A-18 multi-role fighter stationed aboard the aircraft carrier U.S. Nimitz in 2004 off the coast of San Diego, California. What I'm about to tell you has me reliving the incident all over again because it's just too strange for words to adequately describe. What happened that day while we were tracking an unidentified object with my instruments, but also unable to get a radar lock? I was baffled by what I was seeing on the radar. It had performance characteristics that were far beyond any known aircraft in the inventory of the United States or any foreign nation for that matter. So, I have absolutely no idea what it was. It didn't show up on my radar, and it was able to accelerate, get very quick bursts of speed beyond the normal limits of normal aircraft, and was also able to turn very sharp angles at speeds I could not believe. I can't begin to guess how fast it moved. It looked like one second it was there, and the next second it was gone. As I mentioned earlier, my interest in UFOs did not start till later in my career. I'd say with this incident, it was peaked somewhat. The command of the S. Nimitz is based out of Coronado, California, with at least one aircraft carrier assigned to the base on most days of the week. Commander Fravor's role as commanding officer for any given expedition would be to pilot the F-A-18, A multi-role fighter that can serve in various roles from air superiority or attack roles. And he has logged over 700 hours of flight time. Technically, Commander Fravor's rank during this incident would have been Lieutenant Commander. But for brevity, we'll just say O4. On November 14, 2004, us Princeton oceanography expert Ray Keller had been tracking a mysterious object for over 2 weeks. He even called in the US Nimitz to investigate what he was seeing with his own eyes, along with his instruments on board the ocean surveillance ship the USNS Observation Island. According to Commander Fravor's recollection of the events which began to unfold that day, he said this: "I was on a routine training mission flying out to an aircraft carrier off Point Loma in San Diego when the oceanography officer asked if I could check something out with him. He wanted me to take a look at what his radar was showing. He said that there was something weird in the vicinity of the island San Clemente down here. It showed up about 45 miles away. He gave me a vector, and I found it immediately on my radar too. I couldn't make heads or tails of it on my display, so I thought, okay, I'll go take a look and see if I can make it out visually. It was around 2,000 to 3,000 feet above the water, heading roughly south. The thing, whatever it was, would turn very sharp and sort of come back on itself. The corkscrew turns. Eventually, we figured we'd never get a solid track on it, so we decided to make our way back towards the Nimitz. And as we got closer, my wingman made visual contact. He got within a few miles of the object, and I was probably 4 or 5 miles away from it. You could clearly see it, but what you could see was not like anything I'd seen before. The object was just hanging there in the air. We were at 25,000 feet, but I could clearly see the shape of it. It looked like a 45-degree angle cutout with a massive wingspan. It did not look like anything an airplane or anything I've ever seen before, flying over water with no navigational lights. As we were moving in on it, it just disappeared. That was the end of that. It was at this time, after he had returned to the Nimitz, when Commander Fravor's superiors began asking him what he had encountered and what his plans were to follow up on it. But taking into account what they knew about the object, they ordered him to take no further action. As I was leaving, the tactical data that we were getting about it began to disappear, so I thought this thing was moving very quickly away from me, which is why I wanted to get closer. But my superiors told me not to pursue. However, Commander Fravor's curiosity had been piqued. So when he got back to the Nimitz, he asked they pull up any information on what he had just seen. They brought into the ready room for all the data that they had collected by looking at it with infrared and radar. Everything too. But there was nothing. It showed up in none of those displays. It was the shape of a 45-degree angle cutout. Yet it had no propulsion system that we could see. There was no exhaust plume. According to Commander Fravor, by the time his superiors began to look into what he had encountered up close, whatever it was they were looking at had suddenly vanished, and by the time they looked back, it was close enough to them that what he had seen with his own eyes could not be denied. As we were preparing to get into debriefing, I asked other pilots who had been on missions before, and none of them have ever heard anything about this. But as we entered the room, there it was on the projector, the data I had seen myself. All of a sudden, it showed up 10 miles out, 15 miles out, all these waypoints along the track, all at the exact same angle. The object would also perform maneuvers that no known aircraft could possibly do. According to Commander Fravor, one example included what he described as a vertical 180 in which the object changed course instantaneously and shot straight upwards, only to turn again and come right back down. It was almost like it knew we were watching it, or it was moving away from us. I'm not sure, but that's what makes me think it had some kind of intelligence. The other pilots watching the events unfold became terrified by what they were seeing take place, according to Commander Fravor, who admits that he too was now terrified about what they might be facing. Everyone in the room got a chill. We knew there was something really bad flying around us, and while it may not have been obvious to Commander Fravor and the other pilots what had terrified them so much, decades later, we know what they were saying was something from beyond. Me and my brother Travis have been going out hunting together for as long as I can remember back when my pa, God rest his soul, he used to take us when we were little. He always told us how impressed he was because of how quickly we were able to catch on and learn about the area around us, and things we would notice like tracks, markings, sounds. It was great. We didn't actually start going hunting though with him until we were a little older, around 9 or 10, and we instantly fell in love with it. Our pa passed away from cancer when we were roughly about 17 and 16 respectively, since my little brother is only about a year, year and a half younger than I, and it just quite hasn't been the same since. So to honor that, me and my brother make it a ritual to try and go out together every year and hunt and keep it going. The family line depends on it. Our uncle has had some property that has been passed down for quite a few generations that me and my brother and pa have hunted on for ages. These past 5 years specifically, though, we had been going to different places to hunt, and it just wasn't quite the same as our uncle's property. So this year we had decided we were going to go back to her uncle's and give it a go. We contacted him and got okay, and we'd shown up there in the early morning. Luckily for us, there's several different tree stands set up all throughout my uncle's property. He's got about 80 plus acres of just deep woods. We are in Montana, after all, and a really, really nice cabin-style house that we sometimes like to sleep in when we visit before we go out camping. Anyway, we knew this time at the usual tree stands we wanted to hit. We got there that early morning and got all geared up and ready to go. It was clear my brother was going to take a stand about a half mile away from the stand I was in. We were both going to go in about 2 to 3 miles deep into the woods to get to this one specific spot we both knew of. It was actually a pretty good clearing, and there are many bucks and does that were usually sighted here, so we knew this is the prime spot. We got all ready and headed out to the designated spots we needed to go. I wished my brother luck, and he did to me as well. I climbed up into my tree stand once I made it and sat there and I waited. Usually when I get to my tree stand, it's hard for me to not want to get totally relaxed and just be comfortable. I loved it. I loved it being out in nature and hunting. That's where I belong, and I've always felt so at peace. The sunlight was barely breaking through. It couldn't have been any later than 5 or 6 in the morning. I don't remember exactly. I thought it was weird, though, that I didn't notice any wildlife really teeming in the area as we had made our hike back to these stands. I didn't think anything of it at the time, though. An hour had gone by and nothing. The woods were so unusually quiet and all the life in it was gone. I mean, there wasn't a sign of anything around. I thought it was so odd. It was a lot long after that that I started hearing weird noises coming through the woods. I couldn't really place the direction around me to where it was coming from. I just knew it was coming around me from close by. I just figured at first that it was a big buck finally coming to the area, since it sounded so heavy. I kept hearing brush crushing and twigs snapping. The only issue was the heavy thudding and footsteps I was hearing didn't sound like it was coming from a 4-footed animal. It sounded like it was a heavy person. But it sounded way too heavy to be a person. I started to hear what I can only describe as booping-like noises and other strange sounds. I started to get nervous. The sounds began getting louder and louder, and as I looked under my tree stand to see if I could spot what it was, I locked eyes on it. Coming into the woods from the clearing, not even 50 yards away from me, was this giant, hairy man. I quickly ducked my head down to make sure it didn't see me. And every step it took was a deep thud, and I could hear it wheezing and breathing hard. I heard it walk its way towards me, and then as it approached my stand and got close, it slowed down. I was so terrified I wasn't sure what to do. I gripped my rifle tightly, praying I wouldn't have to use it in this confrontation because I knew I wouldn't make it standing out against this thing. It slowly passed underneath me and kept on going. I waited for it to be gone completely before I even moved a muscle. It felt like an eternity. I quickly opened the hatch and got down out of my stand, and by instinct, I ran to my brother's stand where I knew he'd be. Only being half a mile away, I knew it wouldn't be too far. And if I can get past the thing that walked right under my stand, I would probably be okay. The woods were still quiet, which made me so nervous because that means it was still in the area. I'm in it to my brother's stand in probably 10 minutes or even less. He was also as pale as a ghost. I explained to him what had happened, and he didn't really say much. He just said we needed to leave, and so we hightailed it out of there. I've been hunting for years and years, and I've never seen anything or encountered anything like I did that morning. It wasn't until we got back to the truck that my brother was telling me he saw the same thing walking your history stand, and that he doesn't believe this creature saw him or even meant any harm. He's probably right, but it's something that I don't want to have happen ever again. It honestly scared me to death, and I haven't been able to go back to my uncle's property and hunt since. My brother was able to get over it and move on, but he will never talk about it, and since then, we found other areas and places to hunt on. I think we've kind of just collectively decided to not go back, even if it is kind of an unspoken rule. Whatever is running around on my uncle's property, keep it far away from me. I saw 6 flying manta rays in a line with equal spacing. Judging the distance in relation to airliners coming to land at Philadelphia International, their width was twice the length of an airliner. The coloration was silver/blue with a glow to it. Their form of locomotion was quite strange. They had an erratic undulation from side to side, almost like they were tacking through a wild river current. I was amazed they were able to propel themselves forward in this fashion, let alone stay aloft. Their speed was comparable to a small plane. I watched them continue to travel east toward New Jersey for 5 minutes until they became too small to watch. They appeared to be real creatures. The only thing that bothered me was that strange color and glow. I wondered if their skin was excited by the sun. I had the feeling if you were directly under them, they could be translucent. I always thought there should be creatures living in the skies, but we know nothing about them. Being translucent makes sense, as one of the reasons creatures are not seen more often. I waited several months to report this sighting. I wanted independent confirmation from the FAA and other government agencies, but none was forthcoming. My location was Central Bucks County, Pennsylvania, on the border with Montgomery County. I met a guy at a stock show and we were talking about hunting, and he's a predator caller. And he called one up in the Black Hills, South Dakota, and he and another guy and his friend won't go hunting with him anymore. He showed me a picture of the footprint, his foot next to it, and it was like 3 times the length of his foot. It was like 10 or 11 size foot. It was in the brush screaming and yelling at them and breaking stuff. He kind of wanted me to go hunting with him, but, you know, I've never seen one and I don't know if I want to be lucky enough or unlucky to run into it. Here's the other spooky story. Now, this isn't a first-hand report to me, but the friend that told me said the man that told him, and he knew the man that told him this story. He said he had no reason to lie to me, and it was in the limestone area, which is on the western side of the Black Hills, and he had a lumber contract out there. Instead of going out around, he decided to walk across a meadow and go on the back side of it. And the man claimed, this is what my friend Ronald told me, the man walked up on a baby Bigfoot in a grass nest out there in a meadow. It had humanoid features. All by itself only it was, like twice the size of the human baby or something like that. He walked up on it in this nest, in the grass, in this meadow, and he turned around and walked back out, and he didn't go back until the next day. When he went back, the nest was empty, and off they went. A A few nights ago, I was outside smoking in the cool night air. About halfway through settling my nicotine demons, I heard a faint, so faint that it was almost non-existent knocking sound. Just a few slow taps like a kid hitting a tree with a stick. Seeming how I live right next to a thick wooded area, I shrugged it off as some animal. A few moments tapped when I heard the noise that has been haunting me for the past few days. The sound itself is hard to describe. Imagine a duck mixed with a frog and a broken turkey call, but with a guttural twang to it. The sound was so unsettling, I've never heard anything like it, and I've lived in the woods most of my life. Then the knocks continued, slow repetitions followed by that horrible sound. It was still faint, distant even. I was able to finish off my cigarette and kind of ignore it. The next night I noticed the same knocking followed by that sound, but it sounded much closer, as if it was just out of sight beyond the tree line. It was loud and clear now, and that sound sent shivers down my spine. Then the knocking started to become audible from different parts of the woods, and the sound was produced by more than one thing. I was trying to focus on my cigarette so I could finish it and go back in, but the sound became overwhelming. My paranoia kicked in as the sound surrounded me, and I started sweating. I got the feeling that I was being watched, that something was stalking me. After a few seconds of the harmony of sounds straight from a nightmare, I had to nip my cigarette in the bud and go inside. I didn't sleep well last night. The sounds were so close that they might as well be right outside my house. My girlfriend is visiting her family, so I'm here all alone, which is making my paranoia act far worse than usual. I tried to turn up the TV so that I couldn't hear it, and that worked until I decided to sleep. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sleep in total darkness, but when I was lying down, I heard a soft tapping on my window. Shortly after, I heard the god-awful sound that those things make. My blinds were shut and my curtain was pulled over, so nothing could see out or in. I didn't bother looking out, though. I was too terrified. I really need some advice. I've gotten hardly any sleep, and I can only leave my house in confidence during the daytime. Simply leaving my house isn't an option, and my girlfriend will be coming home next week. I've told no one about this yet. How could I explain these things? Anything that you may have to offer would be much appreciated. Thanks in advance, guys. Part 2. A few days had passed from my first post, and things were continuing.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
As they had been for weeks. The knocking slash growling, or whatever you want to call it, continued every night. It seemed to stay just outside of my tree line, and I did my best to ignore it. Last Saturday, I heard a loud sound in the middle of the night. I waited until the morning to investigate. When I walked outside with my cigarette the next day, a large section of my fence was broken down, bent in a very unusual fashion. I took pictures of it, and I can upload them to Imgur or something if anyone is interested. Anyway, at this point I broke down and confronted my neighbor to see if he had anything to tell me about this. He seemed distant about the subject, but he told me that he used to camp out in the woods when hunting, and that he began to experience the same type of thing. Not wanting to tell him that it terrified me, I told him about the fence and how it was becoming hard to sleep because of the noise. He suggested an idea that I was scared to follow through with at first, but we wound up doing. After sharing a bottle of Jack Daniels and discussing our ideas about what we were dealing with, the plan went into motion. Our blood fused with whiskey and pumping through our veins, some warm clothes, and two shotguns. We sat outside the following Tuesday night. We sat in the shadow of the barn that sits by my fence in silence, solemnly passing the bottle back and forth. The sounds kicked up around 12 a.m., so we sat perfectly still and waited for something, anything, to happen. The rustling in the woods got louder, the growls got more intense, and my grip on that shotgun was like a castaway clinging to driftwood. I began to wonder what the F we were thinking. We didn't even know what was running through our woods. Crack. My neighbor's shotgun shot off as a stick cracked directly behind us. We both spun around, half falling over and obviously terrified. Nothing was there, but as the resonance from the gunshot died down, so did the rustling and growling. We both stood there for a good 10 minutes, just staring into the darkness. Silently agreeing that we had done enough, we parted ways and went back to our houses. The new silence that engulfed my house was even more unpleasant than the constant and overwhelming knocking. I could hardly concentrate. I had become so used to the sounds that the absence of them drove me wild. I eventually got myself to get some sleep, but it wasn't deep sleep by any means. The rest of that week, even leading up to tonight, escalated from returning to normal to hell on earth. My girlfriend came home 2 nights ago, and I have yet to tell her about the occurrences. I'm running out of things to do, and it seems that every night the darkness is inching closer and the knocking is worse than ever. When the knocking did start up again, it was worse. It was less of a hushed thing, and now it was loud, angry sounding. The knocking was also at closer intervals, but the episodes of knocking and growling last shorter amounts of time. Again, I'm sorry for the slow update, and I know this post is probably all messed up, but I've barely gotten any sleep lately. I'll do my best to clean this up if it needs it, and I'll keep you all updated as events occur. I always try to drive at night as much as possible. There is much less traffic, and my plans were to get a motel room in Peoria, grab some sleep, and visit my sick friend in the morning. I was driving through an area with a fairly narrow strip of pretty thick woods on both sides and a large body of water called Rice Lake quite close on the other side of the trees to my right. There was almost no other traffic, and I had slowed down a little in fear of a deer running out in front of me. Well, something did run out in front of me, but it was definitely not a deer. It was obviously a Bigfoot. I knew that as soon as I saw it, but it didn't look like what I expected one to look like if I ever had the chance to see one. It was well over 6 feet tall, maybe even topping 7 feet, and was covered all over with fairly long hair, maybe 4 to 6 inches. But the most striking thing about it was that its hair was white. Actually, it wasn't snow white, but instead had kind of a slight cream-colored tint to it. I have never heard of a white Bigfoot before. It was not actually running, but its steps were so long that it was covering quite a bit of ground with each one. It never did turn its head to face me completely, just kind of glanced in my direction as if to make sure I wasn't too close. But from what I could tell, it had thinner hair on its face and looked pretty well like a human. Because of his color, I tried to get a look at the eye color, since an albino of any species usually has pink eyes. These were definitely dark in color, probably brown. On I found you on the internet and needed an explanation of something I saw last October while bow hunting. I live just east of Little Rock and make my way to Sebastian County when the season opens. There's a man who owns a farm with woods who I've known for many years, so he lets me come on his land to hunt. He told me a while back that he doesn't like to go into the woods anymore because there were people seeing too many weird things. I never saw anything weird until the last time I was there. When I got to his house that morning, we talked over coffee. Then I made my way towards the woods. I guess it was in the low 60s and clear. It had rained for a few days, which made me happy because the wet ground in the woods would make less noise when walking. I took the usual trail along the edge until I reached the ridge where I would take cover in the rocks. As I got near the rocks, I saw something moving on the ground. I stopped walking and stood still about 40 feet away. It was an injured deer moving around, but it just didn't look right. The legs were kicking and the head was still. The body was sliding away from me. I stepped into the woods and walked nearer on an angle so I could see what was going on. As I moved closer, I quickly froze. At first, I thought it was a huge snake dragging the deer, but as my eyes adjusted to the low light, I don't think my brain wanted to believe what my eyes were seeing. I needed a better look, so I slowly moved closer and then crouched down behind a pair of rocks. I'll swear on the good book, it looked like a giant centipede. It was dark-colored and thick, maybe compared to a stovepipe. It was side-winding back and forth as it pulled the deer along, so it was hard to tell how long it was. I'd guess that it measured 10 feet or more. There must have been 100 legs on this thing. The body had segments all along its length. It was pulling the deer by the hindquarters and tail. I know I sound crazy, but I watched it for a good while. I followed it down the ridge into the hollow. It didn't stop moving until it reached a pile of rocks as it tried to pull the carcass over it. It let go of the deer and raised up. I'll never forget the eyes as they looked my way. It laid down on the deer and watched me. That was enough because I didn't want to mess with it. If I had a gun, I may have taken a shot at it, but I wasn't sure what an arrow would do. I didn't have my cell phone with me. I slowly backed away, then turned and quickly walked back towards the farmhouse. I didn't mention anything to the farmer other than I wasn't feeling well and needed to go home. I haven't been back since, but I do want to go back soon and see if there is a trace of it. I haven't told a single person what I saw, but I will because I want some backup when I go back into those woods. You asked me for a sketch or photo, so I attached the best picture I could find. The head and eyes are similar. Real weird. The body was rounder and thicker in comparison. I give you my permission to use my story, but don't give out my name and phone number. As I told you before, if I find anything else, I'll let you know right away. Thanks for getting back to me. Back in 2001, I was visiting my great uncle in the region around Kerrville, Texas. At the time, he was living in his first house in the area before he moved to a retirement community near a small set of trees. The trees were beautiful, really, as is the hill country. I was staying with him and my great aunt for about a week. When we went out for an evening to walk his Dachshund, as we tended to do in the evenings, the walk was uneventful as the sun set. Just a normal evening complete with the calls of doves and other wildlife, and the dog just had a wonderful time. Then, suddenly, all the wildlife went deafeningly silent and both of us froze, as did the dog. I remember having a distinct sense of unease and fear that I could not quite explain, and the dog looking directly into a specific area near a streetlight, my eyes turning to where the dog was looking. There was a creature loping through there. A dog-like thing about the size of a large Labrador retriever, save that on the creature's neck there was a head the size of a bear. The thing was loping up and down and up and down in a way that fitted that kind of build. It looked hypnotic in a sense, and I was more terrified than I have ever been with anything else I ever saw. It gave me a visceral understanding of Lovecraft's idea that things that just look fundamentally wrong are terrifying precisely because the proportions do not fit. That thing was powerfully built. The upper limbs in particular were very stout, and the dog remained frozen for another few minutes before we moved back to the house. I'm not sure what precisely that was, or if it was a dogman, but it convinced me that something like that could exist. The sudden silence that lasted for a few minutes after it left, and the dog just being frozen without even growling or barking, still sends chills in me when I remember it. As my only encounter with something like a cryptid, too, it remains something very vivid in my mind, not least because I know how dogs move. I know what wolves would move like, and whatever that was, it was no natural thing that made sense. I've been a female truck driver for the past 15 years. I am also a quantum healing hypnosis practitioner, which is a past life regression and healing modality. I've had UFO experiences, and I've seen 6 ships, including an incident 4 months ago in Sedona, Arizona. 2 nights in a row, I saw a ship, a long oval with an estimated 100 lights or square windows on the side. It was silent, moving left to right both nights at the same height. My first forest people experience was at age 23, driving on Delaney Valley Road. There was a restaurant to my right called Pierce's Plantation in front, and to my left was the Loch Raven Reservoir in Baltimore County, Maryland. As I approach the turn, I feel anxiety for no reason. It's like a wall was suddenly there. I feel like maybe something bad is about to happen. I do not see anything. I hear a clear voice in my head that says, "Do not look him directly in the eyes, so as humans do." I took it in and kept driving, still feeling creepy. 6 miles down the road, I came to a stop and made a left turn onto the Loch Raven Reservoir Bridge. After coming off the bridge, there's a person walking that looks like a man in pants and a black hoodie with a hood up. It was fall and it was cold. The fear was still there and was building up. As the person was coming closer to the car, I knew it was about the person I was warned not to look at. No other persons or cars were on the road. I remember being a defiant 23-year-old and thinking, "I'm going to look at this person." Well, I did. I could not see the face, but there were 2 red glowing eyes. I looked down quickly and passed them. I got a sense of it being male. The fear passed after I passed him. Do I think it was a forest person? No. He was normal size, like a slender teenager. I think the forest people were warning me. Perhaps they knew of the encounter that was going to happen. My story goes back to 1975. My girlfriend and I were driving back to Idaho, where I was going to school. We were headed towards Yellowstone Park and the Montana East Gate in a little yellow Volkswagen. It was around midnight and it was kind of snowing. Picture a 2-lane road with tall trees and no moon or anything, just our headlights and the snow falling. All of a sudden, there was this figure I saw walking right in the center of the road, walking in the same direction as me. In other words, her back was to me. It was a woman. At first, I noticed her and I told my girlfriend, "Do you see what I see? A girl walking out here at midnight. It's probably about 30 degrees out." The closer we got, the more detail I could make out. I was going to roll down my window and ask if she needed help, but we noticed that she was wearing very old, I guess 19th century garb, clothing, and she had hobnail boots. She had a long shawl around her shoulders and in her hair. She had long brown hair, down probably a little bit below her shoulder blades. And the closer we got, we noticed something weird. Her hair was completely dry. Not wet, like you would expect for somebody out in the snow. I was about to roll down my window and my girlfriend said, "Don't even stop. Don't even look. Go." You know, that freaked me out because I was just about ready to slow down. She said, "Don't even look in the mirror. She has no face." I immediately drove away. You can imagine. Here we are putting along in a little Volkswagen, and I just slowly moved over to the right to avoid hitting her. As I moved off and later got to the gate, the ranger said, "Sorry, the pass is closed tonight due to the snow." I asked, "You mean we gotta go back?" He says, "Well, there's a little motel about half a mile back." We were scared out of our wits. Anyway, we got to this motel, and fortunately, the guy still had a room available. As soon as we got in the room, we just locked the door and put the chair in front of it. The rest of the night, we couldn't sleep. In 1988, I was the assigned security supervisor for the Wenigerath Munitions Storage Area. Although it was just on the other side of the village of Wenigerath, we called it Moorbach. We were assigned to Hahn Air Base and not Moorbach. Moorbach isn't even a base. It is a town just down the road on the B-327. As we drove through Wenigerath, I was driving the bus. Some of the guys noticed that the candle in the shrine was not lit, and there was a full moon. We all knew of the local legend. We sort of just laughed about it. When we first came on duty, my patrols would do a sweep of their assigned sectors. As I was in the security trailer with the security controller radio dispatch reading the previous shift's logs, one of my foot patrols found 3 dead deer within one of the wooded areas and radioed us. When I arrived on scene, I noticed that their throats were damaged and 2 had their entrails and hindquarters eaten along with what appeared to be their internal organs, liver, heart. We did have wild boar in and out of the area, and these were a small barking deer species. We placed a call to the local forest meister so he could remove the deer carcasses. I went back to the security control trailer to phone the base on the incident. After that, I radioed all patrols for an area briefing at control. As the patrols rolled in, we heard a low-level but loud howl coming from the direction of our only alarm structures to the west of our location. I radioed the foot patrol assigned to that area since they were still en route. As I did, they came running out of the darkness yelling, "Did you guys hear that?" About that time it howled again. Low, deep, long, and loud. It sounded like it was within our fence line. I called the entry control point to see if they had permitted any K-9 patrols in the area. They said no and also reported the howling. One of the guys said, "What if it's the werewolf?" We all kind of giggled, but then it howled again. This time from the center of the site, but this howl was unreal. It vibrated you inside. Hard to describe. I called the base and updated them that we had a breach of some kind of animal. Sounded like a large dog or possibly a wild animal. They stated that the forest meister had been called and was on his way. I asked the patrols if they wanted me to turn on the area lighting. They said no. The area lighting usually made matters worse since they cast too many shadows and ruined your night vision. As it was with the full moon, we could see pretty good. I issued night vision scopes to 2 of the patrol leaders. They mounted on our M16s. I informed them that they did not have permission to lock and load. Since it was peacetime Cold War, we carried our weapons with a loaded magazine, weapon on safe and no round in the chamber. When it was about to get noisy, lock and load meant to charge your weapon jack around in the chamber and get ready to rock and roll, baby. I took one of the foot patrols with me, strength in numbers, and headed to the perimeter in case it tried to circle my guys. I went by the fallen deer to show the patrol. When we got there, I noticed that the 3rd deer had also been snacked on. I immediately called all the patrols. It had come back and fed on the 3rd deer. About that time, one of the mounted patrol's vehicle had made contact and was pursuing a large dark canine. We ran in a circular route as to try to outflank whatever it was they were chasing. The entry gate radioed me saying that our K-9 patrol had arrived. I had them dispatched to the western fence line since that's where we were all going. The pursuing patrol radioed that it was turning towards the command trailer. Here's a funny part. Alpha Control radioed that he was locking down and wasn't opening the door till daylight. I took the foot patrol and headed to the fence line since we had two patrols going to control. The K-9 patrol was already there, and I dispatched them to the alarm structures to stand by. I did this since they were between control and the perimeter fence. When we got to the fence, I put one of the guys near the fence line, and I, with the patrol leader, headed to a small hill to overwatch his position. I asked for status reports because I could hear a lot of yelling. They said it was coming toward us. I radioed control to turn on our sector's lighting. Our area was mostly open with trees on the right side. We switched off our scopes, and in that instant that we reached to turn off the units, our guy on the fence started screaming. We turned in time to see a huge dark mass clear our 9-foot fence. It quickly faded from our perimeter, lighting into the darkness. I asked for the area lighting to be turned off. I walked further up to the hill and switched on my night scope. I looked in the direction it had run. Since the magnification was weak, I really didn't expect to see anything, then I saw it. It was leaned up against a tree looking at us on its hind legs, breathing heavily. I yelled 2 o'clock 200 meters. Then it turned and faded into the trees. Only one other patrol leader saw it. It was now 2:30 a.m. The forest meister arrived at the entry gate. I had to sign him in. I asked the K-9 unit to foot patrol the fence, but the dog had retreated to his kennel and would not come out. I put all units back on active patrol and to remain extra vigilant. As I escorted the forest meister to the dead deer, I explained what had happened. He listened carefully and seemed to be absorbing it all in. He took pictures of the deer for records, then bagged the bodies. He said that it didn't appear to be the work of wild boar. It had all the markings of a wolf attack. He said wolves usually didn't kill their prey. They usually died from shock and blood loss. They would knock it down and start eating the hind quarters with the animal still alive. This one killed them, then ate them as evidenced by the neck injuries. I asked if they could jump 9-foot fence. He said this one could and laughed. The guys were jazzed to say the least. We had a group meeting around 4 a.m. I said that I needed written reports by the shift's end at 6:30 so to take turns patrolling. Alpha 2 command trailer opened his door, even though it was still dark out. I remember sitting there sipping some coffee saying, "Are they going to believe this?" He said we were all going to piss in the bottle. That meant a urine analysis to see if we were on drugs. We laughed about it. When we got back to the armory, I was pulled aside by my flight chief and shift commander. I briefed them on what had happened. My flight chief asked me to take home the statements and proofread them first, then to turn them in before guard mount. When I arrived, I noticed that the roster had been amended. We were all going back to Moorbach. It was very rare to have the same patrol twice, let alone the entire area. On the bus ride out there, we were pretty much quiet. I stopped the bus at the altar to make sure the candle were lit and the old guy awake. Thumbs up. The flight chief showed up around midnight and we got a powwow. He said we had two choices. We could turn in the statements but omit the werewolf references or shred the statements and have me write in the logbook that a wild animal had killed some deer in the wooded area behind the ammo building and that the forest meister had been dispatched. End of story. As we all looked at each other, he stated that our PRP would be called into question. PRP is a program that enables us to work around nuclear resources. To lose your PRP cast a dark cloud over you, plus you got crap details while you were being reevaluated. Took up to 45 days, so we opted for the later. Some of us choose not to talk about it, but obviously some did. It really happened. It wasn't some story to scare the Jeeps. Jeeps are FNGs, rookies, etc. Was it a werewolf? Was it an endangered European wolf? Was it a coincidence that the candle was out that night of a full moon? You decide. As for me, I'll say this. The above statement is true to the best of my knowledge.